It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
There's a long fly ball. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Mike Trout, a two-run homer. He blasts one to give the Angels a 2-1 lead.
There you go. Home run call of the day. Wayne Randazzo. Angels broadcast, Mike Trout, two-run homer, big two-run homer. That's only part of the reason why Wayne gets the home run call of the day. It's also because he gives a tip of the chapeau in his delivery to John Sterling. Yep, John Sterling, the man of the hour, the man who decided that enough was enough. Yesterday, he decided that he's no longer doing Yankees broadcasts. An iconic figure, obviously, been doing Yankees broadcast since 1989. And there was no better home run call that we could have surfaced, that we could have honored, than the one that Wayne did. And there's nobody, no topic other than the one that we did for the podcast that we should have done for the podcast today. And that was honoring John Sterling. And we do it in fine fashion. Let me tell you, I love when we do something in fine fashion. We did it in fine fashion. And that was thanks to Sweeney Murdy, MLB senior correspondent right now, but also a guy who is part of the Yankees broadcast for years upon years upon years and was right in the middle of things when it came to John Sterling. Sweeney is great to talk to. Anytime he's great to talk to, but particularly today, if we want to reflect on John Sterling and understand what it was like to be part of that broadcast, what it was like to witness John, what it was like to see that evolution, to see him over the years, see those home run calls, see those nicknames, all of it. There was no better person to turn to than Sweeney Murdy. Really, really appreciate him jumping on. Also, a reminder, everybody, baseball is rolling along, man. Oh, man, there's so much good stuff going on. And we're going to keep pumping it out here in the podcast and on socials. At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. X Twitter and Instagram. So go check those out. But today, I want you to check out the podcast with Sweeney Murdy because it'll give you a great perspective of the man of the hour. And that's John Sterling. Here you go. All right, there's nobody I'd rather have on right now on the planet than Sweeney Murdy, MLB senior contributor. Sweeney, it's always good to see you, man. How are you? First of all, how are you?
Doing great, Rob. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and it's been a long time, too long. But we are brought together today, maybe because the Yankees are doing well. Who knows? But no, because of John Sterling and his announcement that he's calling it quits. And I honestly, Sweeney, like I can't think of anybody better that I know of to talk about John than you. You're around him for a long, long time. You work side by side. And I just think that you probably have an awesome perspective of how he was to work with, how he worked, how he evolved, all of this. There's a lot to pick through here. So, Sweeney, the first thing I'll just ask you is that do you remember the first time that you came in contact with John?
I don't think I remember the first time, Rob, but, I mean, it was probably sometime in the mid-90s. I'd started working at WFAN in 1993 full-time. And by 2005, I started covering some games on weekends and just heading out to the stadium every once in a while. So it was probably right around there as the Yankees were starting to make, you know, put together the teams that made this incredible runs, in the late 90s, starting in 1996. So, I'm sure I met him and Michael, right around that time. And just as someone who listened to the radio station a lot, John, you know, at that time I was behind the scenes as a producer, but John still knew who I was and, you know, treated me very well then. And it wasn't until 2001 when I started covering the team, on air for the radio station and was around the team and him all the time. And yeah, he was great because he was, you know, listen, he was a fan of baseball. He was a fan of the Yankees and he was a fan of radio. So, you know, you got all three of those things. And Rob, that's the important thing because for people who listen to him and, you know, whatever opinions you formed of him, you have to remember that when you listen to a Yankees broadcast with John Sterling on it, you got a couple of very important things. One, you had somebody who knew in-depth Yankees history going back decades and could relate any moment on the field now to any moment that happened in his lifetime, which goes back to, it could have been Casey Stengel or Joe Torre that he's referencing in managerial moves. It could have been Mickey Mantle or Derek Jeter that he's trying to compare to Aaron Judge in some form or fashion. So, that reference point is quite amazing. And the other thing you got was somebody who wanted the Yankees to win as much as the fans who were listening. And that came out, his frustrations when they wouldn't play well, and his excitement when they did play well. I know that there, especially probably, you know, where you are, there are a lot of people who didn't necessarily appreciate that, probably because of what was happening with it. You know, the Yankees were winning when those things were going on. But for the Yankees fan, they got those two major things on every broadcast, which I think is really hard to achieve. Listen, you get that with Joe Castiglione, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, yeah. Oh, yeah, listen,
you can
sweetie.
Connect the dots,
The Yankees could be in last place, Red Sox could be in first place, or vice versa. It doesn't make a difference. It could be the middle of June on a dreary day, whatever. It's like the first score that Joe reads is the Yankees score.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And he's happy or he's sad. And, you know, and I think that's, you know, I think that a lot of, you know, I do want to talk about sort of the evolution of broadcasting. I actually find it like super interesting. But that to dive into it where you're just like those guys, like John and Joe just say, hey, listen, it is what it is. This is what it is. I'm a broadcaster, but I want to go back to, so John came, was a Yankee, started with the Yankees, I think in 1989.
Right.
And like you were familiar, I'm sure, with him. And then you, like you said, you start a couple years later working with him, listening to him. This is always a weird thing for me. Listening to someone and then seeing the person work.
Yeah.
Is two different things. And sometimes it's for the worse. Sometimes it's for the better. Sometimes it's just interesting. What was it for you?
It was fun, you know, because I mean, I think the thing that makes you, the thing that makes you like people in the positions we're talking about is you want to believe that it's genuine and that it's not putting on a show. Now make no mistake. John knows he's putting on a show. He's a performer. But it's also genuine, if that makes sense, because the emotions that go into what he does are all genuine. But he is also somebody who, you know, makes no bones about his love of theater and old movies and, you know, vaudeville type of humor and things like that. And you'll hear plenty of references, in his games that, you know, reinforce that. But he's got those two things working for him. He loves the performance, but he's also bringing it to you from his own heart and soul as somebody who wants the Yankees to do as well as the fans who are listening. So I think that's what makes him special and makes him unique. You know, I can't remember who said this, but, I always kind of attribute it to something around John because I can't remember if this was something he said or somebody else said, but it was the idea was about preparation sometimes. And somebody said, my voice arrives when I do. Right. And John, you know, John wasn't and still isn't the kind of guy who does the, really deep dive. Preparation that a lot of broadcasters do now. I mean, all the analytic data that you have to incorporate into a broadcast. Yeah. You know, John's got no use for that, right? But he has his own set way of preparing for a broadcast with the basic numbers and also looking stuff up as the game goes along. And it's kind of, you know, and that way that way it feels like you're watching the game with him as opposed to having somebody present the game to.
Oh, you just hit the nail on the head. I think to me, that's what you want. That's where I think that his popularity, others' popularity, and for lack of a better visual, it's the person sitting on the couch next to you in the living room, right? Instead of the person who was just pounding you over the head with information because that's what they were taught in broadcasting school with the proper voice inflection or whatever it is. Just, hey, listen, you're a Yankee fan. You know enough what's going on and just be genuine. And I mean, I would imagine that's what hit home for people, right? That there was a sense of him as unique as he was. He was genuine in that uniqueness.
Well, and I'll tell you something that really matters, and you have found it with your audience too, I know, because of just the experience that you guys have gone through. There are people right now who are sad that John is leaving this broadcasting gig. They are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Well, 25 years ago when the Yankees are winning World Series, they are teenagers and young adults. And every time you hear John's voice, it reminds them of something from the past. And that's the beautiful thing about broadcasting, about what the business we have been in. And we've experienced it ourselves with broadcasters that we grew up listening to, right? And you connect that to your own past and your own childhood. And what everybody else is doing is you recognize that these are the people who were with you in your car, in your backyard, at the swimming pool, wherever you were, you know, away at college, wherever you were when the Yankees won the World Series in 1996 or when David Wells threw a perfect game in 1998. And you guys are going through that now because the nostalgia wheel just hit with the 20th anniversary of 2004. And all the people that loved Ortiz and Manny and Pedro and all those teams, 2004, 2007, even 2013, which doesn't sound like it was that long ago, but yeah. In reality, you know, if you were 15 years old in 2013, you know, you have a job and you're living on your own potentially and all those kinds of things. So, it takes you back to that part of your life. And that's the important thing that these guys bring. And whether or not they are calling the game a certain way that appeals to a certain critical level, their voice is still calling the game. And every time it does, a little part of you will think back to, the call from 25 years ago and what you were doing when you were 10 years old or 20 years old and remembering those glorious times, because those were glorious times for the Yankees then and for the Red Sox shortly thereafter, and all that nostalgia that we all lived through and that, you know, your Red Sox followers are living through now.
You know, it's such a great point. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, you know, we have this wave of broadcasters, new broadcasters or broadcasters have been around a little bit, and everyone's trying to find their style and get to that point where they're that voice. But it's first of all, it's hard to do because it takes a long time. I mean, I'm sure when you started, John Sterling wasn't ingrained in the Yankees fandom like he was ultimately like 10 years later.
Yeah.
But also, and maybe you can weigh in on this. I've said this, is that I think there's this paranoia to be genuine. I do. Like, I think that John was genuine, John is genuine.
Yes.
He's genuine. And there is this paranoia that a lot of broadcasters that you have to do it, you know, for lack of a better term, the cookie cutter way, or you're going to get the ruler on the hand. You know, it's like, no, it's okay to be genuine.
It's a subjective art form.
Yes.
And that's the thing that I think everybody kind of loses, because every broadcaster has a critic, right? He does this too much. He gives you too much of this, or he doesn't do enough of that, or he doesn't. Okay, but that's your opinion and you're allowed to have it, but that doesn't mean that that person is doing a bad job or isn't allowed to keep doing the job. There are, like I said, for every generation of fan, just hearing his voice is going to be enough. I mean, when I first came to New York, Bob Murphy was calling Mets games. And even if, you know, he had lost a little bit of his sharpness, his was still the voice that people equated with, I'm sorry, 1986, 1969, you know, the Mets championships and the voice, the soundtrack of their childhood. You know, they heard Bob Murphy, they thought of Tom Seaver, and it made them feel good. So it's the same thing with hearing John Sterling's voice now. You're going to think of Bernie Williams and Derek Jeter. And, you know, for those of us who, you know, Rob, we were adults when those guys played and actually covered them and talked to them, it doesn't sound like it was that long ago. But once again, if you were 10 years old in 1996, where are you now? And, you know, how long has that voice been part of your life?
I know. And as we talk about the importance of radio, or the importance of whatever you want to call it now, you know, they freak out if you call it radio because, you know, you listen to it on your phone. All right, whatever. The importance of non-television broadcasting. But the importance of it is exactly that. We're ingraining these things into the next level of baseball fandom. But Sweeney, I want to talk to you about, this is a very specific thing, obviously with John, with the home run calls and the home run, the nicknames. And, you know, it's amazing that he was able to go through that many players and come up with that many nicknames or that many calls. Do you have any sort of perspective of that, of like how, when he, and maybe people know this, I don't, but I don't. Like when he sit down and okay, we got this player. What are we going to do now? So we got to come up with a name.
I after a while it did become kind of like that, but it started pretty organically to hear him tell it. You know, he has talked about how just one day Bernie Williams hit a big home run and he said, "Burn, baby, burn," and it kind of stuck. The thing about some of those calls in the mid-90s, as the Yankees are starting to get good and going on this championship run, Mike and the Mad Dog on WFAN would play John's calls in the afternoon. You know, they would hit the air at 1 o'clock and usually around 2 or 3, they'd say, okay, let's hear John's call from last night. Because we still lived in a world where something at 2 o'clock in the afternoon from the night before, something at 2 o'clock in the afternoon was still new, could still be new to you. So they would say, okay, let's hear what John's call was last night. And people were like, oh yeah, let's hear that. Because at the time, the Yankees were on WABC, a competing radio station, WFAN. And there was actually a little bit of tension and friction of, you know, competition about, are we allowed to actually use their calls on our radio station? But basically Mike and Chris just did it, and, you know, repercussions be damned. You know, in the end, it all worked out fine because the Yankee fans listening to our station loved hearing it, and the other radio station got free publicity on a different radio station. So, I mean, everybody wins, right? So, that's, and as that happened, I'm pretty sure John was on his way into the ballpark listening to Mike and the Mad Dog pretty much every day. So he would hear his calls. He would hear their reactions to them. He would hear fans' reactions to them. And then it just feeds on top of it, right? And then the Yankees are winning and all these players are hitting big home runs. And, you come up with a couple others, you know, Jorge Posada was Georgie Juiced one. And just a couple of, Tino Martinez was the Bam Tino. You know, again, sorry, Red Sox fans, but you know,
no, this is where we're stretching from coast to coast. It's all good.
There you go. So this is kind of where it began. And as it just became popular and his calls kept getting played more and more, you realize, okay, this is something that fans really enjoy and like. So you're going to have to keep coming. And then players would come over.
Yeah.
Say, what's my home run? They were wondering what their home run call was going to be. Sometimes John would go to some lengths to figure it out. Other times a lot of people would start offering suggestions,
yeah,
you know, and yeah. I mean, I did it too. You know, it's a, and even to the point where a player would hit a home run, like I'd see a player who hit a home run from in say like the Royals and Twins game. And I'd say, man, I hope that guy becomes a Yankee one day. Cause I've got the perfect home run call for John, you know? I'm positive. I'm not the only one who ever thought that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how it kind of snowballed and took off. And listen, we started living in a world where the sound bites were everything,
yeah,
right? And listen, there were two things that you looked out for if you were a Yankee fan. You wanted to hear the home run calls and you wanted to hear the Yankees win. Yes. And I can tell you that because of my role from 2014 until 2022, I got to sit in the booth in the ninth inning every night. Susan Waldman said today that she's never seen him perform the Yankees win because when they do, she's on the field getting ready for a postgame interview.
Yeah. Yeah.
While she's down there, I've moved into her seat to prepare for postgame and I get to see the whole body shimmy and shake and gets his whole body into it as he does it. It was a thrill. It really was. It's, best seat in the house for that. And Joe Castiglione's going to the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah.
John Sterling shouldn't be far behind.
Oh, no.
He has his critics, but if you just look at everything about longevity, iconic calls, and what he means to the fans of that team, I mean, he shouldn't be far behind.
Do you have the first – I'm going to ask you for your favorite John Sterling moment or a favorite John Sterling moment, but do you have a favorite home run nickname that jumps to mind? I mean, the Tito Martinez one's pretty good. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, and he morphed that because remember Jason Giambi came in and replaced Tino Martinez via free agency and Bam Tino just became Giambino.
Right. You know?
So basically play off the same thing. And I remember fans saying like there was an insult to Tino. I was like, what? I don't know that I have any favorites, right?
It's amazing to me, you know, like because one of the great things is I was when Verdugo hit his first home run for the Yankees, the first thing you think of is, all right, how's he going to do this?
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of players, that's the fun of it. I mean, that's the fun of it. And you were, as you said, you had a front row seat for him coming up with these. And there's probably some you're like, really?
Yo, that was part of the fun for me sometimes. Like if I was sitting in, a lot of times I'd sit in the other booth, and wouldn't listen to through the game broadcast and only come in at the end. And if I knew that the player hit his first home run as a Yankee, I would say on the post game coming up, I would stay away from the social media part of it, but everybody would post it anyway, but I would say, hey, coming up, you hadn't heard it. I felt like an MTV VJ. I'd say the world premiere of a new John Sterling home run call is coming up. Let's hear it together. And, that was sometimes, and I forget, sometimes he'd catch me. I didn't want to hear it beforehand because I wanted my reaction to be authentic. Post game.
Yeah. And that's it. You mentioned social media. That was another thing is that like all of a sudden, you know, for the vast majority, 1989 to let's say social media got really cooking in say 2010,
right? Sure.
2008, 2009, 2010.
Yep.
But that's where like the John Sterling home run calls, like it was made for social media.
Yeah, completely. You know, and listen, to be honest, there's, you know, it's also a wonderful forum for the negative people everywhere because all they want to do is catch everybody making a mistake in every walk of life and say, see, I got you. Here it is. And the broadcasters are not immune to that. You know, Rob, I always say there are only two two groups of people in the sport who are not allowed to make mistakes, umpires and broadcasters. Like, yeah. It's the end of the world when either one of them makes a mistake. So sometimes it's a little more glaring than others, but you know, whatever. Listen, it's just people watching a game and then you correct it. I would say, listen, we'll figure it out eventually, right? And if you're listening, you know, you'll hear the score. You'll get everything you need to know eventually, but sometimes things happen and we're not really sure what we're watching as it's happening. And maybe we make a mistake. The, you know, how many times do 20,000 fans stand up when a ball gets in the air and then it's caught, you know, 50 feet in front of the fence and everybody groans and sits down? You guys all made the same mistake we did.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. He's the guy who, you know, the guy sitting on the couch next to you makes mistakes. Said stupid stuff or whatever. And like you said, that's what we should understand. And that's what should be endearing about broadcasters, and broadcasters should really, to be honest with you, Sweeney, embrace it. And it's hard. It's hard. It's a hard, especially now with social media, but that's a whole nother thing. So do you have it doesn't have to be a no doubt about it favorite moment, but maybe just a great moment with him that jumps to mind.
I can't think of one off the top of my head, Rob, but here's the thing, okay? When people ask me, I covered the Yankees for 22 years for WFAN, and when people ask me about what my favorite moments were, like, it's not moments, you know? There's a couple of things that, like, I feel fortunate that I watched in back-to-back years, I saw seven-game battles between the Yankees and Red Sox of historic epic proportions, 2003 and 2004. I got to see a great majority of Hall of Fame careers up close. You know, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, and, you know, Mike Messina, Randy Johnson spent portions of their career. You know, Joe Torre's Hall of Fame manager. I saw all of that up close and appreciated not just what you saw on the field, but what went into it behind it and all the work and preparation. When you watch great players prepare to be great and how they react to victory and failure and all those things. So I'll tell you, it's the same thing when I think about, you know, sitting with John and Susan, you know, in a broadcast booth and being just part of that. I mean, that's two Hall of Famers that I got to share airtime with. And just the idea of being part of that, a small part of that up close and seeing it, that's my great appreciation for it. And all the moments that everybody has with them and with John specifically, because we're talking about him right now, I mean, those all become part of it. And little things like just sharing meals with John, or, you know, sitting next to him when he's particularly frustrated by a Yankee loss, or when, you know, they had a walk-off homer and I'm sitting next to him watching him do all his thing. Like, it's pretty amazing. And honestly, to know the medium as well as he does, because sometimes you pay attention, you watch him make a call and he'll just sit back.
Yeah.
And you hear the crowd and you hear, you know, he knows when to jump in and out, and he can make himself rise to the occasion. The fun thing, because I did sit there in the ninth inning, the fun thing, a lot of times these games are close, right? And you're the last batter is, okay, game going to continue here? We have another shot, or, you know, is it going to be a loss? Is it going to be a win? They're not all like 10 run games, right? So that moment when he lets the crowd kind of rise up and he sits back and then he leans in and gets ready to do that call. I mean, that is phenomenal. The theater, I'm telling you, it's theater performance for him, right? And he understands the moment. He understands the medium. He understands how to get his voice through that microphone and cut through everything. You know, our old engineer, Jack Maldonado, said his mic technique is really good. And even when John would struggle with his voice or something like that, he had, you know, phenomenal, you know, he had the technical skill to, you know, it's a little inside radio stuff, but
that's all part of it. It's all part of it. And, you know, Sweeney, I hope that, you know, you've been just unbelievably awesome in painting this picture. And I'm so glad that we're talking because, you know, this is the end of an era. I mean, no matter where you're from in the country, it's the end of an era.
I think the important part to remember here, Rob, is that, you know, and I'll draw it back to the athletes too. Like, you know, there was an expectation, around the Yankees, you know, Derek Jeter retires. Who's the next shortstop going to be? Right. And I always say, listen, if you think the next shortstop is going to win four World Series or be around for 20 years, you know, you better lower your expectations. It's probably not going to happen. You know, the DiMaggio to Mantle handoff doesn't happen every day in sports or in any other, walk of life. Doesn't happen that often. Whoever takes John's place on a permanent basis, I'm sure will be a very fine broadcaster and hopefully has a nice long career. Mm. But if you think they're going to be here for 30 plus years and, you know, I mean, hopefully they are, but I think the odds tell me that it's probably not going to happen because it's just really hard to do. I hope we appreciate what he brought to us for so long and at a really high level for a very long period of time.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it takes a long time for that voice to ingrain into the fandom. And that's just whether you're good or bad or what, indifferent. That's just how it is. And it will take a long time. And certainly that is, I think, the biggest testament to John is that exactly what you said at the beginning, which is everybody. And that when they love the Yankees, they love the big moments. And when they think of the Yankees and the big moments and players, that's the voice that they hear, and which is really cool. And the fact that you were there, able to paint the picture for us, it's awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
Rob, no problem. Thank you. I mean, just think about the fact that you could literally every hit that Derek Jeter had and every save that Mariano Rivera had, you could, if all the tapes existed, you could string them all together. 3,600 hits and, you know, 650 saves. You could string them all, together because John had them all. It was pretty impressive. And, I hope it's a good send off for him. Yeah. And I hope he enjoys, just living his life and, for a long time because he brought a lot of joy to a lot of people.
What a great combination though. Like all those great players that you talked about and the uniqueness and talent of John Sterling and yourself as well. I appreciate it. Really, I do.